Right now, I'm very happy to welcome back to our program Ava Golinger. She's a Venezuelan-American attorney and author of the best-selling books The Chavez Code: Cracking U.S. Intervention in Venezuela and Bush vs. Chavez: Washington's War on Venezuela. Ava is editor-in-chief of Venezuela's international newspaper, Correo del Orinoco, and I would advise our listeners to look up the English edition of that, which comes out every week, and we'll give the web address for that tonight before we conclude our interview. But Ava, first of all, thanks so much for making time to be on our program tonight.
Well, thank you for inviting me and having me on the show, Scott.
So I guess the first question we want to ask is what we know about Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez's health condition after his most recent cancer surgery in Cuba. There's a lot of speculation, a lot of complaints in the U.S. media that they don't have all the details, a lot of respect for the privacy of President Hugo Chavez that I read about in comments from many people all over Venezuela who aren't too concerned they don't have all those details. But what can you tell us tonight?
Well, President Chavez has been suffering from cancer that was diagnosed in June of 2011. He's undergone four surgeries at this point to either remove tumors or deal with other issues, complications relating to those tumors and that cancer. It's in his pelvic region is where it's located. It's not organ-specific. And the last surgery, also when he was, his first cancer surgery took place in June of 2011. Subsequent to that, he underwent chemotherapy in February of 2012. Another tumor was found, and so he began radiation therapy. So he's also had a lot of very difficult treatments throughout this 18-month or so period. He ran for re-election last year, did his whole campaign, won in October. At that time period and throughout the campaign, he had been recovering from that latest surgery in February and the radiation therapy, and everything seemed to be going well. Nonetheless, he announced that in early December that the cancer had come back, new cells had been detected in the same exact region, and that he would have to undergo another surgery. At this time, he's made a public broadcast stating that it was going to be very complicated. He was in a lot of pain, that in the event that he was unable to fully recover, for the first time ever, he named someone who he would choose to succeed him politically, not like, some kind of monarchy, but in terms of, he specifically said, obviously, is his vice president, the person that he presented, Nicolas Maduro. He specifically said, he would take over if Chavez couldn't finish his term out, this last term, and that in the event that he couldn't assume his new term, and new elections had to be called in the country, he said his candidate would be his vice president, Nicolas Maduro. That was the first time that he had ever publicly made such a statement, and that sort of gave an indication into the severity of the illness that he's been suffering and the status of it at this point. Then he underwent the surgery on December 11th, and since then has suffered various complications, including respiratory infection and a few other problems, respiratory failure come up as a consequence to that infection. But fortunately, as of yesterday, in fact, an official statement was made that President Chavez is conscious. The respiratory infection has been stabilized, has been controlled. He's stable, and he's progressing favorably. He's still in a delicate state, as they put it, recovering from the surgery, and now it's been, a month, a little bit more, that he's been in this situation. So obviously his body has been pretty heavily affected. But he's conscious, he's still active, and that's the state of affairs. The inauguration for his new term was scheduled to take place on January 10th, but according to Venezuela's constitution, if there was any supervening circumstance, it could be delayed. It was determined that this was a supervening circumstance, that Chavez was not in an irreversible state where they would have to declare him unfit to assume the presidency. So it's been delayed with the expectation and hope that he will be able to be sworn in before the Supreme Court, which is how it would now happen, when that time comes, and some of those issues are still being evaluated in the country in terms of timing. They have to see if he makes a full recovery or not, and then if he's conscious to make the decision of will he resign or what will happen. So that's the state of affairs at this moment. There's a lot of hope now, especially the fact that he's awake, he's active, he's progressing favorably, his infection's been controlled, he's no longer in respiratory failure. So, you know, those things give a little indication that he could continue to progress favorably and overcome the situation that he's been in and assume his new mandate. We have to remember, though, that he does have cancer, and we don't know what the state of that cancer will be once he comes out of this latest surgery and hopefully recovers from it.
Thank you for that thorough wrap-up there, Ava. Is there any indication that the Supreme Court could go to Havana to swear President Chavez in for his next term?
That's not a matter that's on the table at this moment. That's really been discussed in any kind of formal way. There's no need for that to take place at this time because court's decision on the matter regarding the delaying the postponement of the inauguration, which is according to Article 231 of the Venezuelan Constitution, was that no time frame had to be set at this moment, but they were going to evaluate that. And the issue is really an issue of irreversibility because, for example, Chavez is not in an irreversible state at this time. If they were to decide, which is what the opposition has been calling for, that he is permanently absent from government and new elections need to be called, the head of Congress needs to take over temporarily until new elections are held and a new president is elected, imagine if Chavez makes a full recovery within the next month or 2 months or 3 months. He was just elected on October 7th with 55% of the vote, a pretty solid, you know, landslide victory, and what would happen then if they declared him that unavailable to serve, and then he was able to serve, and then they'd already elected a new president. So, I mean, this is a really delicate, complicated situation. They can't make any rash decisions, jump to any conclusions. He's not in an irreversible state, so they cannot make an irreversible decision. So that's why, as of right now, things are sort of waiting out to see, you know, how his recovery is going to be. I mean, obviously, it's a supervening circumstance. It's not a desirable circumstance, but it is a circumstance, and people elected him in Venezuela with full knowledge of the fact that he had been suffering from cancer. And so, I mean, I think it's important to remember that there's the issue here of respecting the will of the people, and as of right now, and especially because on January 10th, the formal day of the inauguration, what happened was instead of there being an inauguration, because it's delayed, millions of Venezuelans poured out into the streets rallying behind Chavez and showing their support for him and saying basically he's their president and they're waiting for him to take office when he gets better. So as of right now, no possibility in sight in the near future of the Supreme Court swearing him in from Havana. It's something that maybe could happen in the future, but all of those issues still need to be worked out constitutionally, whether or not that could happen. I mean, it's happened, I think, in other countries, including the U.S., where the president has not been sworn in the usual place because of unforeseen circumstances. So it certainly is a possibility, but at this stage, it's not something that they're considering. The biggest hope is that, obviously, Chavez will return to Venezuela and be sworn in a formal ceremony there physically before the Supreme Court.
Ava, if you could, just recap briefly for us the events in Caracas on January 10th, the date set aside for the inauguration of Hugo Chavez, who was unable to be there because of his health situation, where he remains in Havana, Cuba. But tell us about the kind of sentiment among the hundreds of thousands of people who came out to celebrate Chavez's October election, re-election victory, as well as the heads of state who came to that inauguration that didn't occur because of the health situation. President Daniel Ortega of Nicaragua, as well as Evo Morales of Bolivia, I believe, were there. What does this all signify, you think?
Yeah, it was actually a pretty amazing, extraordinary event. And, you know, some ridiculed it or looked at it as though it was a non-important event. But actually, it was, I would say, possibly even more important than the actual inauguration would have been. Because what happened was that, you know, hundreds of thousands, or some would say millions, because it wasn't just in the capital, Caracas, it was across the nation, people poured out into the streets and rallies and marches to support President Chavez and show their solidarity with him, but also to reclaim the presidency as their own. And people came out into the streets with sort of, homemade presidential sashes saying, "I am Chavez," or "I am the president," because Chavez represents the people. And, you know, that's obviously been one of the biggest achievements of the Chavez government throughout the past a little more than a decade, has been not only the reduction of poverty of the majority of the country, but the inclusion of the majority in the political life and the economic life of the country. So making, empowering people to feel as though they are active participants in their government and in the construction of their country. And so that's what was really happening, was that people came out on the streets to say, "We're here, we're present. You know, we represent what Chavez represents because he represents us. And so we are claiming this presidency for ourselves." Yes, there were representatives and heads of states from 27 nations, actually, in Latin America. The presidents of Bolivia, of Nicaragua, were there, as well as Uruguay. President Jose Pepe Mujica was there. The foreign ministers and heads of states of Suriname were there, various other Caribbean islands, including Grenada, Antigua Barbuda, Dominica, other foreign ministers from Ecuador, from Argentina, throughout the whole region were present to also manifest their support and solidarity for Chavez and also for the people of Venezuela, and to show their confidence in Venezuela's government and the continuation of Chavez's administration, because opposition leaders, as well as a lot of the media, U.S. spokespeople and many other critics, mainly of Chavez and of his administration, have been trying to say that there's a power vacuum in Venezuela, that there's no president, that there's just a complete void and absence of any government. But the truth is completely opposite of what they're saying, because not only is there a continuation of his administration, but there's also wide support regionally for the government that's still operating and functioning and active as normal. I mean, things are still proceeding, policies are being enacted. Chavez delegated most of his sort of technical responsibilities to the vice president before he underwent this latest surgery. So, you know, budgets are being passed. I mean, things are taking place. The executive office is operating fully, and of course the Congress is operating fully, and the courts and all the others. So, I mean, there's no issue in reality of any kind of absence of power in Venezuela. All of that seems to be a big media hype and an effort by the opposition to try to find yet another excuse to justify some type of coup or undemocratic overthrow of the Chavez administration.
Ava Golinger, I don't really know the mood of the streets. The mood in the streets of Venezuela, but I would assume that the opposition's sort of ham-handed and kind of bullying their way to try to, you know, redo the most recent election that they lost would be offensive to a lot of Venezuelans, even opponents of Hugo Chavez, who maybe have some sympathy for a guy who's going through, you know, a life and death struggle on after his surgery. Has this backfired in any sense to the opposition, who, you know, certainly could have played it differently and said, "We wish our president well, and we need to abide by the Constitution, but of course we want to patiently await the outcome of a surgery." But instead, they kind of went for the jugular here, almost literally.
Yeah, there's no sympathy on behalf of most of the members of the opposition, at least their main leadership. Of course, they've expressed, you know, words in quotes of sympathy, saying, you know, "We understand whatever what he's going through." And the Congress, which includes the opposition members, has authorized unanimously his trips to Cuba for his treatment and his temporary absences. So they've done that specifically, saying that they sympathize with the situation. But it stops there. I mean, the situation as it stands now is where opposition leaders are saying Chavez is gone, he's basically dead as far as they're concerned, so therefore new elections must be held immediately. They're also trying to pit members of Chavez's government and political party, the United Socialist Party of Venezuela, against one another, saying this one should take power, this one should take power, and try to create the situation where they're dividing and the members of Chavez's government to weaken it. At the same time, there are marches in the street. There are some more radical elements, extremists, right-wing of the opposition, that have taken to the streets. They're trying to destabilize. That's happening today. It started yesterday. They're calling for a big march on January 23rd, which marks the day of the Venezuela's overthrowing of its last dictatorship in 1958. So they're saying they need to take to the streets now because they're living in a dictatorship right now. They were saying that throughout Chavez's whole administration. So none of this is new. These are the same individuals and organizations that executed a coup against Chavez in 2002 using the same type of language and the same, excuses to justify their actions. They're the same ones that have tried to undermine all of the democratic institutions in Venezuela throughout the past decade, and to have tried time and again to discredit President Chavez and his administration. So this is just another platform for them to do it. They're not looking at this in any kind of human way and saying, no, this is a person, he's our president. There's no respect like that. It's not, unfortunately, for the majority of the opposition, it's not like maybe you could compare to the United States, where when things happen that affect the people of the country, there tends to be a general rallying together. I mean, I'm talking of major events like September 11th, or even most recently with the Sandy Hook massacre. I mean, there seemed to be a sort of rallying together, except when you get into the discussion of gun control, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, people backing the president or just saying we're all in this together. That does not happen in Venezuela. The opposition is not rallying behind the president. They're not saying, oh, we're going through this together. We need to get through it. We need to show solidarity and unity. Absolutely not. It's the opposite. But there has been some backfiring. There have been several members, key members, very public figureheads, actually, of the opposition, who have separated from them, who have said, we're not going to continue, supporting this opposition. This is crazy. Like, they're taking extremist positions, and they've gone well beyond, whatever those individuals had believed in, even though they didn't and don't necessarily support President Chavez. They're not supporting those positions that the opposition is taking at this time. I mean, there are others like one of the Congress members, Maria Corina Machado, a very far right-wing opposition leader who was involved in the coup against Chavez in 2002, led a recall referendum against him, managed an NGO funded and actually founded with U.S. money from USAID and from the National Endowment for Democracy, has very close ties, met with George Bush in 2005 in the Oval Office as the representative of the Venezuelan opposition. I mean, she's now publicly saying there's no president in Venezuela. There's a dictatorial state, and it's being managed from Cuba by the Castros, and so the U.S. needs to come and intervene here. I mean, so that's happening at this time. There are marches in the streets, small, pockets of violence being promoted by the opposition, but I think it's minimal, and they don't have international support at the level that they would need in order to pursue any kind of action that could actually have any impact. I mean, I think that Chavez's government remains very strong, very unified. They've showed a very strong unity throughout the past month or so that Chavez has been hospitalized, and have been very clear that they're standing strong, that they're active, they're working, and that they're waiting for Chavez to come back and assume his position as president. And that, as of right now, there's no further discussion beyond that, at least publicly.
Ava, one of the things that there's been criticism over the years that Hugo Chavez has been in power in Venezuela, that he's really centered his United Socialist Party around himself, and that there's some concern that his socialist program can't survive without him, given that he is such at the center of things. What's your view of the prognosis for his political movement, his economic movement new Bolivarian socialism that he practices there, and with a lot of support among the people in Venezuela? What's the prognosis for that to continue on without him, for that project to continue on without him if he is incapacitated or dies?
Well, there's no question that Chavez is a very powerful figure. He's very charismatic. He has a capacity to unify all kinds of organizations and sectors and parties and groups and people that maybe normally would not have been unified. That's been one of his strengths, and has what has really enabled him to be this powerful leader of Venezuela. Nonetheless, I think that this has been a process that has been going on for more than a decade of transformation in the country. People have had a major conscientious awakening. People have been very empowered in terms of understanding their role in government, their role in society, their role in the political process, in the economic process. And that's not something that's going to go away just because Chavez isn't there anymore, if that comes to happen in the near future. I think that over the past year that's been shown. I mean, Chavez was present in his presidential campaign, but not as much as he had been in previous years. And nonetheless, I mean, he had a sweeping victory. Right after that, when he was hospitalized, it was a week before regional elections took place for governors in the country, and he wasn't involved in the campaign for those governors at all, because throughout that entire time he was, you know, recovering from his own campaign and elections, and was feeling this new pain and complications that were taking place for which he needed the surgery. So he never went out and campaigned with any of the candidates for governor that were from his party or allied parties. Nonetheless, they won in 20 out of 23 states in the country. So, I mean, that was a clear showing of the fact that the party has grown very strong. It's a young party. It was just formed in 2007 and, you know, is really just coming to its own now. And this was one of the first sort of, I think, trials and tests for the party, was whether or not they would be able to have such a victory without the presence of Chavez. Everyone always said, oh, you got to have Chavez. You got to have Chavez for any of these candidates to be able to be elected. But that was just shown to not be true. That these candidates won, they won with pretty big victories in most of the states, and you know, people came out and voted. And then again, I would say, even though January 10th was the day scheduled for Chavez's inauguration, and people were out rallying behind Chavez and supporting Chavez at the same time, what I was trying to express earlier was the fact that people came out and made their own presidential sashes and said, "I am Chavez. I'm the president." Meaning, you know, they're the ones who are active and involved in leading their political process. You know, that people understand what the president is going through. Obviously, you know, I can't say in a completely generalized way that everybody understands. Some people think he's not very sick. Some people think he's very sick. Some people just want him back. Some people think he has to be there. Some people think he doesn't. And I think that overall, I mean, Venezuela has changed forever. And that people are actively participating, that will continue. The United Socialist Party of Venezuela is the strongest party in the country. There's no question about that. All of the other parties, which are mainly opposition with the exception of the Communist Party and a few other smaller parties that are on the left, have very little backing and support, have minimal organizing capacity. And I think that there are elections coming up in April for mayors throughout the country, and I think that, again, the Socialist Party is going to sweep the elections. And that won't be due to Chavez's leadership. It will be due to the leadership of the people, collective leadership. And that was really, Scott, the goal overall of this Bolivarian revolution in Venezuela, was not so that Chavez would lead and help the country and bring the country into its new and brighter future. It was so that he, as the leader, unified all these different groups to be able to help build a collective leadership that would eventually lead their country. And so I think in many ways that's what's beginning to happen now. It's starting to blossom. Whether or not it will be able to come completely and flourish to full fruition, we don't know. But I think that so far things are advancing in a very interesting way. And whatever develops, there's no question that today people in Venezuela feel much more empowered and capable of leading their own processes collectively than they ever did before.
Well, Eva, thank you so much for spending time with us tonight to talk about the situation of President Hugo Chavez's health, as well as the political situation inside Venezuela. That's certainly quite concerned about the president's health and the future of the country. Just a word, if I could, very briefly, if you have time. Before his recent surgery in Cuba, Hugo Chavez had named Vice President Nicolas Maduro as his heir apparent in terms of politics and running in his stead if President Chavez was unable to run himself or had to leave office. What's your assessment of Vice President Maduro as the potential new leader of Venezuela?
He is someone who has come from grassroots organizing. He's a union organizer. He's young. He's barely 50 years old. He has great capacity and unifying skills as well. No one could ever fill the shoes of President Chavez. That shouldn't be expected. But Nicolas certainly is a person with great capacity to lead the party and to unify different sectors. He's a good mediator, negotiator. He has a very big heart. I know him. I've been his advisor on certain foreign policy for several years. He's been the foreign minister also since 2006. And he's a very humble person. He's come from the working class, so he understands it well. The principal policies of Venezuela's government, of Chavez's administration, have been focused on eradicating poverty and on regaining sovereignty of the nation through its own internal development and progress and building of infrastructure. And so that's something that's been happening and will continue to happen. And I think that Nicolas Maduro is probably the person who most understands these policies, has been at Chavez's side now for two decades, and has been one of his biggest confidants now throughout the past several years. And more so, being the foreign minister, understands the foreign policy and has been pretty much the sort of key proponent of it and implementer of it throughout the past year. So I think certainly there's no question that he would be able to continue on with the same policies that have been promoted and implemented throughout Chavez's administration. And I also think that since Chavez named him publicly, which was obviously intentionally, that his supporters would support Nicolas. They would support him because he's the guy that Chavez chose. Chavez trusts him, and they've seen him there, and they've seen what he's done, and he has a good capacity for discourse, and he speaks well. He uses language that people can understand. He is as leftist as Chavez is, and so those are his same principles and ideals. At the same time, he's someone who's able to have conversations because he's been the country's top diplomat for all these years. So he's able to have conversations with people across all different spectrums. I mean, he's also the one who has been recently conversing again with members of the U.S. government, the Department of State, to try to reestablish relationships. And even though he will hold strong to the principles of the Bolivarian Revolution, of Chavez's government, he also is someone who he's not too radicalized in his own language and his own capacity to communicate in the sense that he wouldn't be able to pursue those types of relationships. He will, as long as they're based on respect, which has always been the position of the Chavez administration. So I think it's a very good choice. I think it's probably the best possible choice that Chavez could have made. Hopefully it won't come to that, but if it does come to that, then I think Nicolas is definitely the right man for the job.
Eva, again, thanks so much for all you do. And we should make sure to let our listeners know about the website for the international newspaper that you edit, and that's Correo del Orinoco. There's an English edition that might be very instructive for our listeners to check out.
There is. I think it's probably best to access it via VenezuelaAnalysis.com, just because the site for the newspaper is in Spanish, even though it's the English edition. So it might be easier just for our listeners to go to VenezuelaAnalysis.com And there you'll be able to find the link to the newspaper, which is has the Spanish name Correo del Orinoco International. It's the English edition. You can also check out my blog, which I have not updated recently, but there are still lots of information on there, and that's at www.chavezcode.com, or you could follow me on Twitter, just at Ava Gollinger.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ava, again, for all you do on informing us about the situation in all these critical years during the peaceful revolution, in mostly peaceful revolution inside Venezuela. So thanks for being here, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for having me on the show and for giving time to talk about Venezuela.
Thanks, Ava. Good night.
Good night.
Ava Gollinger, a Venezuelan-American attorney, author of the best-selling book, The Chavez Code, Cracking U.S. Intervention in Venezuela, editor of Correo del Orinoco, the English edition.